Welcome to Syntex. On this Friday Supper Club, we have Carson Gross here. We're going to be talking all about HTMX. We're going to be able to pick the brain of the hypermedia man himself and talk all about everything that you all have been asking about since our first HTMX episode. My name is Scott Talinsky. I'm a developer from Denver. With me, as always, is Wes Boss. What's up, Wes?
Hey, not too much. Excited to have Carson on today to ask him all the questions that we have about HTMX and understand what's going on here and hopefully clarify, because like we had tons and tons of feedback from that show, and some of the stuff was valid and some of the stuff was just like, oh, you actually, I don't think that you totally understand how it works. So hopefully we're going to clarify all of that.
Yeah, totally. And also, if you're asking questions of your code, like, hey, why did this bug happen? Maybe you want to have a tool like Sentry on your side to reveal all of those bugs and why they happen, so that way you can go solve them. So if you want to use a tool like that, head on over to sentry.io/syntax. Sign up and you'll get 2 months for free. Carson, how's it going, my man?
It's going pretty well. A little crazy. Things have been crazy since last July in HTMX land, for sure. Got a lot more attention than I was certainly used to when the Primogen picked it up and Fireship Dev did a short on it. And so there's been a sort of a huge amount of attention. A little overwhelming, but, you know, it's all good. It's fun.
Yeah. Was that the sort of catalyst for the
it was. I was.
HTMX?
I was sitting on a bucket at the state youth baseball championship. I'm a baseball coach here, and I just checked Twitter and was like, "That can't be right." And it's been that can't be writing for since about July. It was really good. Wow. I got very lucky because I released a book middle and end of July last year, and so it really helped. Just a lot of things kind of came together at one time, so very lucky in that sense.
Cool. Well, do you want to give a brief introduction to who you are and what you do to our audience?
So my name is Carson Gross. I run Big Sky Software, which is at bigsky.software, and that's just a consulting company that I run that supports my open source work for the most part. And then I teach, my primary job is I teach at Montana State, which is where the Primogen actually went for undergrad.
Oh, nice.
Funny connection there.
Did you teach him?
I did not. I know people who taught him, though. There are people that are still there that he knows. So
all of these HTMX ideas are like institutionalized at a very high level.
Yeah, we're trying. I mean, I'm trying to write actual academic papers on it, and we'll see. The academy is kind of its own thing. So,
So you're out in Bozeman.
Yeah, Bozeman, Montana. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been there a few times.
Yeah, it's a cool town. The joke is that the nice thing about Bozeman is like it's right next to Montana. Like, you can see Montana from Bozeman. So
the vibe out there is really great. Obviously the skiing and mountain stuff is wonderful too, but yeah, big fan.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a cool town. Don't move here, but it's a cool town.
Yeah, I get it.
And like what led you to developing what HTMX is? And actually, maybe let's step back one step further, because people are probably tuning into the first couple of minutes and being like, should I listen to the rest of this one?
Right.
What is HTMX for anyone who hasn't heard of it?
HTMX. So basically you can think of it as HTML plus plus. It takes the ideas of HTML, in particular anchor tags and forms. And then what I say, those are, to use some fancy terminology, those are what are called hypermedia controls. One of the interesting things about HTML is that you embed these controls, the things that do stuff inside the document itself. What HTMX does is it takes those two ideas, forms and links, and then tries to generalize that idea. So it lets you put attributes on in HTML that let you trigger an HTTP request based on whatever event you'd like. And then that HTTP request is going to be returning HTML rather than JSON, which is what's normally used for AJAX requests these days. And then that HTML is placed in the DOM somehow. And so HTMX basically just provides you, there's like 7 or 8 core attributes that let you generalize that idea. And it's a surprisingly powerful 7 or 8 attributes. You can do quite a bit with it. So if listeners want to go to htmx.org/examples, we have like infinite scroll can be implemented in those terms. Active search, where like you type something and then the results kind of immediately come back, that can be implemented using 3 or 4 HTML attributes. And it's all done in terms of HTML rather than sort of reaching for a thicker client-side model. So that's the big idea there. It sounds pretty simple and it isn't super complicated to implement either. It's a surprisingly powerful idea. I think that hypermedia is underestimated by most people today because HTML has unfortunately just sort of stopped making progress in that area. And so, people, when they think about hypermedia, they think about clunky, full page refreshes and so forth. All the browsers have gotten better at that stuff. So,
One thing that I've really noticed is that when you bring up HTMX, people are so quick to say, well, you can't do X, Y, and Z with it. And I do think that one of the smartest things that you've done on the site is have this examples page, because if people were to just take a quick glance at this examples page, you can see that they're really, that kind of invalidates many of those conversations, because people just straight up, they underestimate it, like you said, and they underestimate what it's capable of, especially in the fact that many of the times when we're doing a lot of this stuff, deleting a row or like you said, searching, you're having to hit the database anyways, right? You're having to make a server trip. So what are we doing just sending JSON and then, using JavaScript to distribute that? And so I think that's really powerful. I wanted to know, like, what was the catalyst that made you want to create something like HTMX?
Yeah, so the original HTMX was Intercooler.js, which was released back in 2013. And that was based on some work that I had done internally at a startup for a friend it's kind of funny, but I was trying to sort a table and I was trying to do it client side because in 2013, all the cool kids were doing stuff client side in JavaScript. I was using jQuery because in 2013, everyone was using jQuery. And I just couldn't make it fast. I was trying to sort a table. There were a couple thousand rows in it. And browsers at the time, I'm sure now browsers can handle it without breaking a sweat. But at the time, the browser runtimes were not as good. And so it was very slow. And I ended up, out of desperation, just trying this technique out where jQuery had a few methods for issuing a request and then slamming the results into the DOM. And I did that, and it was very fast. This was a Rails app at the time. And I was a little bit shocked by that. And so I started writing. I recognized that technique. There's also something called PJAX, which is sort of an older take on this idea. So there were some ideas floating around. And I then saw Angular 1 and the way they used attributes. And I thought to myself, well, I'll just use this attribute idea, this custom attribute idea, to basically drive this little custom function that I've been using to do this same pattern. And that eventually grew into Intercooler.js. So it came out of a performance, what at the end of the day was a performance issue. I wasn't super passionate about hypermedia at the time. It was only after I released it that people pointed out to me, hey, this is RESTful. This is like real REST. I don't know if we want to get into that or not, but this is the language I would use today is like, this is a hypermedia oriented approach to web development that you're doing. So, eventually I learned a bunch more about that and kind of wrote a bunch of essays and understood what I was doing a lot better, over time. And HTMX is basically a rewrite of Intercooler.js where I pulled out the jQuery dependency just because JavaScript has made so much progress in the last 10 years. It was possible to do that in a way that worked across most of the major browsers.
Yeah. I remember PJAX first hitting the scene and it blowing my mind. Being like, yeah, wait a second, we're doing a route here without a full page load. Wow, this is crazy.
Yeah.
I could have I was building like an audio player on a site, and the fact that I could change routes and have that audio not restart without having to pop it into a second window was like pretty mind-blowing.
I often wonder what HTML would look like if you were to like totally scrap everything we've done and done it from the beginning. Like, do you think that we would have some declarative ways to do what we're doing, to run, fetch, and get parts back? Do you think that like HTML might look like HTMX if we were to scrap it and start fresh?
I don't think you even need to scrap it and start fresh. I think that the ideas of HTML, I say this a lot, like HTMX is cool, and you know, it's not like it's a big library. It'll be useful for people that adopt it. But I think the ideas, like the essays, the htmx.org/essays page, and then our book at hypermedia.systems, which you can read online for free, it just talks a lot about hypermedia in terms that normal developers can understand. Unfortunately, the hypermedia world can often be pretty academic. There's a lot of negativity in it as well, I've noticed. I don't know but the ideas there are good and they're interesting. And so I think you could take the ideas of HTMX and integrate them into HTML in maybe a more standardized form. Like, okay, maybe you don't want everything to be a hypermedia control because of accessibility issues, but like, let's just look at buttons and make it so that buttons have the ability to be standalone hypermedia controls. Mm. And I think you could start making progress again as a hypermedia. There's also some like frame sets. There's some ideas that HTMX kind of gives you a lot of flexibility around that were there in nascent form early on, like frame sets and you can target an iframe with a link. It's just that iframes kind of stink. They can't participate in the DOM. There were frames and there were frame sets, and those have been deprecated to an extent. And so I think the ideas are kind of laying around. And my hope is that HTMX helps sort of spark those, spark the thinking around what could HTML be? Because I don't think HTML can, you know, Figma, for example. Like, you're not building Figma in HTML, or at least you're not building it in, you know, HTML-based logic. Like, there's just too much going on there. But on the other hand, there's a lot of apps that probably could be built in pure HTML and very effectively if they were to start, you know, picking off some of the bigger ideas from HTMX.
Yeah. You know, it is something that I've been really paying attention to when I use various apps that I use day to day. Like, I tweeted about this. It was, you know, like, how many of these things really need anything more than HTMX to do what they're doing? And I don't know if it's that people don't realize that you can do things like, you know, streams or server send events or stuff like that. But there, it is really way more capable. But the one comment I tend to get on repeat whenever I bring this up to people is, why would we go backwards when we went forwards to this, you know, client side and now SSR and hydration world, or even resumability world, and that it's a step backwards into, you know, old school Ajax. You have like a comment on that kind of response that people typically have?
Yeah, I think, I look at it like more of a Hegelian dialect. Like, you know, it's a dialectic. Like, we were all server side. It's not thin client, but hypermedia oriented, where hypermedia was really running the show. And then we moved to the reactive thick client model. And, you know, in some ways I have to say, even reactivity isn't new. Like, in the 80s, we were building apps in this way, you know, like we had, if you go and you look at like Java Swing, for example, it has reactive aspects to it. There's a lot of infrastructure there. And, you know, I built apps like that. Initially, this is kind of ironic, but initially I sort of rejected the web and I built web Java based remote you know, using what I would consider a real remote protocol rather than JSON. And so I'm pretty familiar with that stuff, or at least I was. It's been a long time. So, you know, I think there's been more back and forth, particularly if you step back, than probably appears to particularly younger web developers. And so, you know, I think there's a dialectic here. The original web, HTML, it was amazing what we accomplished with HTML, you know, like the web apps that we were able to build. It just showed the power of, you know, the network, and because it was clunkier, and a lot of people complained about, you know, web apps versus the thick apps they were used to, but web apps still kind of won, and the web still kind of won. But then eventually we realized, okay, this the user experience that we can produce with hypermedia isn't good enough. So we need to start moving towards JavaScript-based applications, and that's fine. But then there was also, you know, in my mind, HTML just kind of was always hamstrung by not continuing to add features, hypermedia features in any event, as it made progress. And so I view HTMX as sort of like not necessarily a return to an older model so much as it's a... It's building, taking some of the good ideas from today, you know, and then building on some of these older ideas as well. And so I think there's a dialectic in play there. And so HTMX isn't right for everything. There's a lot of apps that it just won't work for.
Yeah.
And we have an essay up on that, when to use hypermedia. So, you know, I think it just, you know, oh, it's an endless cycle. I don't know. I mean, we're making progress. HTMX is better than PJAX in many ways. So we're making progress.
Yeah.
What are some examples of apps that are like you shouldn't build with HTMX? Like, when should you personally, do you think that you should reach for React or some sort of SPA framework?
Yeah, well, I don't know about React because to be honest, I don't have a ton of experience with it. So I don't know what it's good at.
okay.
But obviously Figma is something you're not building in HTMX. Similarly, another example that's given in that essay is something like Google Sheets would be difficult to implement in HTMX because in Google Sheets, you've got very fiddly interactions. You update one cell in one part of the screen, and then you've got to update some other cell on another part of the screen, and that's all highly dependent on the formulas, and it's very difficult. Like with HTMX, you kind of want to refresh the whole thing, and that's not going to work in a spreadsheet environment. Now, on the other hand, I will say, if you've got like an enterprise application and you can do sort of row editing of tabular data, then HTMX can be very effective. Like if most of your value is being added on the server side rather than on these client side interactions, which is the case in a lot like ERP apps and, you know, any sort of app where you're coordinating human or non any coordinating activities, like very often the value of the app is on the back end. It's not in the front end. And in those types of applications, HTMX is maybe a better option because you can do better UI with it, but just because you can do good enough UI and you're adding your value on the back end, and then you save a tremendous amount of complexity, hopefully. And then that, you know, that complexity that you save on your front end can be dumped into functionality on your back end instead, where there's more value to be found.
And do you think that puts more of a load onto the server to do more? I think that's a comment I get a lot. You know, I've been talking a lot of HTMX in the Svelte discords and stuff like that. And people say, well, that's putting a lot of that resources now that you need onto the server rather than dumping it into the client.
Yeah. I mean, there's some truth to that. Like an HTMX app is going to be less burdensome on the client because just first of all, we're just parsing HTML, which is done in, you know, C, like we don't have a lot of heavy JavaScript logic. That's actually typically a good thing because it means your client can often perform more quickly. The one thing I've tried to point out to people is that the difference between rendering a JSON representation and rendering an HTML representation, particularly if you have compression enabled, which you should, is actually very low. Like there's not a massive difference between the two. And if you have tabular data, HTML is actually more efficient in some ways than JSON because JSON repeats field names, right? Unless you do, you know, something crazy in your formatting. And so I don't think there's as much of a CPU and memory and network transfer time difference between JSON and HTML as many people suspect. And so, you know, that's the first thing that I'd say. But on the other hand, what HTMX does imply is a network request for some interactions. Not all interactions, but for some interactions. And so there's a network latency there that is present in HTMX that might not be present in, you know, a well-tuned SPA application. Because a well-tuned SPA application might do an optimistic update or whatever, you know, or might be able to do something entirely client-side. Now, that being said, there are tools available in HTML, like the details element, for example, that are there to support client-side interactivity. And HTMX is not against client-side interactivity, per se. Like, we encourage scripting. We just say you should script in a hypermedia friendly manner. Like, you shouldn't be doing, you basically shouldn't synchronize state with the server in a non-hypermedia way. Now, that's, you know, I'm pragmatic about it. Like, there's going to be times when you're just going to do that and it's fine. Like, I'm not going to hunt you down about it. It's fine. It's all good. We got to get work done. So I think that there, you know, there is some truth to that, that there are going to be user experiences that are difficult to achieve in HTMX that are easier to achieve in SPAs. On the other hand, what I would say is your experience with SPAs universally good? Like, this promise of performance that we've gotten, I would say, has not been achieved as broadly as many of the advocates for SPAs would suggest. It's hard to do. There's a lot of layers often between, like, the front end and the back end. It's, you know, it can be difficult to figure out exactly what's happening. And so that can lead to, you know, the sort of famous GIF of, like, you know, an argument in favor of SPAs, and then it's just a spinning GIF, right? You know, SPAs can be done very well. I don't want to say they can't, but on the other hand, I think you can build very good HTMX-based applications that don't overburden your server. HTMX is focused on updating partial bits of HTML, and partial bits of HTML can be very efficient to generate. They can actually be more efficient to generate than, like, a bunch of JSON API calls to build a particular part of your UI. Mm-hmm.
And what about your thoughts on, like, a lot of these frameworks right now? Obviously, React Server Components, they are now saying, all right, well, let's render everything on the server, because in a lot of cases that makes sense. Why send the JSON and the library to build the table and all this other stuff that you need just to render it out in the browser? Just do it on the server where it could be a lot faster, and then just ship the actual endpoint, right? Like, clearly, that's going to be, in some cases, or in a lot of cases, that's going to be a much smaller payload that needs to be shipped to the end. But you can sort of, like, dip into front end stuff as well if you need it. Do you have any thoughts or opinions on sort of that trend as well?
Well, I agree. I think that those approaches, from what I've seen, and I'm not an expert on that stuff, you know, I get people that come in on Twitter and are like, oh, you know, have an opinion on server components. I'm like, I can't even have an opinion on React, really. I think, as well as I understand it, my criticism of that would, of React components in particular, and even this might be wrong, because there's someone I think who's doing work to make this not true, is that it tends to tightly couple your front end and your back end. Like, now you have to be running React type code or JavaScript on your back end. Whereas if you just take the hypermedia model and say, okay, we're going to exchange hypermedia. One of the good things about HTMX is you can pick whatever back end language you want. And that's something that I'm pretty passionate about. There's been a meme going around, like, this lava flow kind of right, coming at people. And there's this sort of fruitless person using a backhoe trying to, you know, save a street that's obviously going to be destroyed. And the title says this is back-end developers trying to prevent JavaScript from taking over the world. I think the situation is not that dire. And I've seen a lot of people in the Go world, obviously the Django world, the Python world, pick up HTMX. And I think HTMX does give life to some of these back-end frameworks that, you know, have been, for the last 5 years in particular, kind of shunted aside in favor of the, you know, what to a lot of people seems like like the obvious pick of JavaScript on the server. That's not to say I'm not in favor of JavaScript on the server. There's some very good runtimes now. I think there's reasons to pick it, but I don't like the idea that like you have to pick it on the server side. And so that would be, mm-hmm. and even that's not a particularly informed criticism, because again, I've seen someone claiming they've been implementing React server components in other programming languages.
Mm. It makes sense that you can do that. And so I build full stack JavaScript applications, and my back end is 90% it's not React. Like, my logic is not React. I'm not writing database queries in JSX. I'm writing it in JavaScript, and then I pass that data to my templating layer. And that's at the point where you sort of pick up React. But I do think that is important, because a lot of times people just assume like that's the only way to build these types of things, and they realize like, no, there are large companies out there that do not have a tightly coupled front end and back end, and they need something like this. So I thought that is pretty neat that you can do that, as well as like some people prefer to build their logic in PHP or Ruby or Python or all these different languages.
Yeah, one of the things I say is like, I'm never going to be a Lisp person. You know, I may use Go at some point in my life, but I'm never going to be a Lisp person. Mm-hmm. But I think it would be a shame if the Lisp community was not able to participate in web development because we had just decided, okay, we're going to do everything in JavaScript. I think it's good for mm-hmm. Lisp people to exist and in the Lisp programming language to put pressure on other programming languages and so forth. So I like that diversity of backend choices for web development, which I think HTMX helps with.
Yeah. I think there are some poignant things in there, like the fact that I did hear this criticism from React folks a lot when talking about HTMX, was that it does tightly couple your server to the UI because you're sending HTML. But unironically, they're not even recognizing the fact that if you are using React server components, that's a much more tightly coupled system. Given that you're saying that, you know, you like that it can expand to all sorts of different backend languages, personally, like you, if you're writing an app, what is your favorite stack to work in?
Well, I worked in Ruby for a long time, and there's an awful lot of tools in Rails in particular that are just there that are really nice. I may start this summer doing some web development again, but I don't do a lot of day-to-day web development, unfortunately, right now, because I'm so busy with teaching. But I would probably, at this point, I would take a hard look at Django. I didn't pick Django for the book, because it's kind of like Rails in that it's sort of a one-stop shop that has everything mm-hmm. that you need. But that also adds a bunch of complexity. So in the book, I used Flask as the web server because it's just a little bit easier, I think, for non-experts to pick up. And this gets at something that I've been talking about on Twitter a little bit lately, which is so many of these things are context dependent. Like you shouldn't be a false dichotomist or whatever. Like, you know, Sometimes one thing's the right choice and sometimes another thing's the right choice. And it just depends a lot on the context. So I would probably lean that direction. A lot of it would be driven by exactly what I was trying to achieve. Like if I was doing, you know, an AI thing, I would probably, I would definitely look at Python. If I was doing something that was, you know, maybe, let's see, what's another good example? Java's got a ton of really good libraries. I know Java pretty well. If there was a good library in Java that did the thing that I wanted to do, I wouldn't be afraid of picking it and using like Javelin or something like that for the front end. So I think it just depends.
Cool. Yeah. I've been personally grabbing, all kinds of different stuff to work in HTMX lately, whether it is like gave me an opportunity to get my hands dirty with Bun, the JavaScript runtime, a little bit, just because it was easy to pick that up and shoot some HTML. It comes with a folder-based routing setup and stuff out of the box. So yeah, I do love that flexibility and freedom. I did quite a bit of Rails and Django myself earlier on in my career, and it is funny how the types of things that you lost by moving into this JavaScript framework world that we never really quite reclaimed in the JavaScript world.
Like what?
Like what? Like, okay, so you could think of the closest analogy, and it's not even in JavaScript, but in PHP, like a Laravel system, right? Get like, so you have a templating syntax, you get scaffolding, you get migrations, you get ORM, you get routing. So you get more, especially more in the data piece. That you get in JavaScript. And that's an area that I think the JavaScript frameworks are afraid to touch, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, one thing I really like from Rails is the model stuff, like active record, and then all the callbacks, like lifecycle callbacks they have. Active record, I know ORMs have a little bit of a bad name now, but I really like active record. It does a pretty good job of giving you the 80-20 solution for an ORM, and then you can kick out to SQL when you want. But it has a lot of life cycle hooks, and it does, I think, a really good job of allowing you to encapsulate your business logic or your domain logic in model object and model classes. I like object-oriented. I've got a bunch of unpopular opinions. I like object-oriented programming. But you know, one thing you mentioned, Scott, a little earlier was people saying, "Oh, we're coupling with HTMX. You're coupling your front end to your back end," and that's true. They're not wrong. there's an essay up on the HTMX website called "Two Approaches to Decoupling," and HTMX does couple your front end to your back end in a pretty dramatic way compared with like a generic JSON API. And we actually argue that's a good thing because your web app tends to be very churny and like, you need lots of little features to or whatever. And this can put a lot of, if you have a generic JSON API that's serving that, then that API ends up getting very complicated because of that. So you either have to introduce something like GraphQL or you have to create a bunch of specialized endpoints for your app or whatever. And so separating those two actually helps your general purpose data API be more generic and, you know, satisfy the people that need that. It gets the chaos of your web app sort of out of the JSON API. And then, you know, there's also this idea, you know, as we pointed out, HTMX does let you pick whatever kind of backend you want. And that's because you've decoupled sort of at the network architecture layer. So you basically decoupled like a level down rather than at the application level, you've decoupled at the network architecture level. And so that is a different style of decoupling, but it does give you this sort of freedom to pick whatever backend you want in a way that you can't if you're, you know, more committed to a tight integration between client-side JavaScript and server-side JavaScript.
I even saw somebody embedding their entire API in a worker. It was like a Go compiled to WASM through their entire API in a worker, using a SQLite and everything's local on device, shipping HTMX. And I was thinking, this is a wild, wild world that we're entering here.
Yeah, I've seen some pretty crazy mashups with HTMX. I can't say I support all of them because I don't understand all of them.
Yeah.
But you know, it's cool. Have fun.
Yeah. How do you feel about web components?
I haven't used them very much myself. HTMX2 is going to have better support for them. They kind of suffer from what iframes suffer from. They're kind of there's almost too much isolation. I don't think they did a good job of thinking through how to integrate them. Like there's so much focus in the components world on isolation. But there are just times when you need to integrate. And so form participation has always been kind of, you know, difficult and so forth. I understand they're improving, but I'm not an expert on them, so I don't have a super strong opinion. I've never needed them. I've always achieved sort of similar ideas by using server-side template reuse, like inclusion and so forth on the server side. I think that the firewall that kind of got in the heads of the designers, like we have to have this like hard firewall between the component and the rest of the DOM, has hurt their adoption. But again, I'm not an expert. That's just my outsider opinion on it.
Yeah.
And what are the big like templating engines that people are using? Are you, and or what are you reaching for?
I like any template system that supports something that we call template fragments, which is the ability to, within a bigger template, to call out a piece of that template and say, this is a separate piece of content that I want to be able to render by itself. And that's kind of an obscure feature of template languages. More templating languages are picking that up as they see HTMX being adopted, and they hopefully read that essay on it. But what that lets you do is it lets you have one page with your content in it. And then if you need to dynamically re-render a part of that page, rather than extracting that out and having another file to deal with that's somewhere else and you can't see, you can just tag some of the content in that template and say, okay, I want to be able to render this separately. And that works really, really well with HTMX, because then you can say, okay, you know, something like if you're doing a poll, for example, you can say, okay, just re-render just that bit of the screen, but I still can see everything in one place. That's one thing that I like about it, is like you can still sort of see everything in one place.
I'm so glad you said that, because like in the past like 2 months, I've brought up the fact that Svelte can't do multiple components in a single file. And everyone's like, just bring them into another file. And React Server components, if it's a client component, you got to put it in another file. And I've gone so far to try to like change my editor so that I can edit them in line, like put a mini editor inside the VS Code. Because like I just want to look at the whole thing and type where I want it to go, like it was HTML. But a lot of these templating languages make it really tricky to do that type of thing. So, and I was thinking the other day, I was like, am I wrong? And I'm glad finally somebody else is on board with me.
there's another, I'm sorry to keep referring to the essays page, but there's another essay up there called Locality of Behavior, where we talk about kind of exactly what the big idea of what you're talking about, which is you don't, and this is a criticism I have of the idea that you should separate scripting and styling and HTML all apart, is that in order to understand what's going on a given page, now you have to look in like 10 different places. Mm-hmm. It gets very difficult to, you have to keep a lot in your head to understand everything that's going on. And so the terminology we try to use around that is locality behavior. You want to put the stuff like where it's being used as much as possible. And so I think template fragments are sort of an example of an implementation where you get more locality. So you can just see, okay, on this page, this is what's going on. Cool. All right. Move on with my life. Yeah. I don't have to navigate around so much.
I saw an interesting thing today. Object-oriented HTML. It was an interesting repo. Have you come across that? I just saw it for the first time today.
Yeah, I saw it on Hacker News. I didn't dive into it too deeply, I don't know. What was your take on it? Did it look interesting?
Yeah, it looked interesting because I think specifically it does kind of what we're talking about here, where in line with your HTML, you're able to define like, okay, even just in line, this is a template here, this is a fragment here, in one specific file. And even as far as you could reference another HTML file, it seems like kind of the way that I almost wish HTML was invented to be, where you could have your own fragments and templates both inline or imported.
Yeah, I have no idea. It's in a tab somewhere. I need to read it.
I was just reading before this conversation, which is why it's on my brain. I have no idea if this is a valid approach or not or anything, but I thought it was kind of interesting. Yeah. Is there any kind of local first story in HTMX, given that there's so much server required? This is something that it's been on my brain just a little bit. I don't know, you know, I haven't been doing too much local first myself. But is there anything there that HTMX can do?
Not HTMX. It's like, you know, in my mind, again, if you're talking about HTMX, you're talking about HTML++. And so HTML doesn't have much to say about local first. It's their hypermedia controls. You can set up a web worker, I believe, to handle requests. And so you can kind of intercept the network abstraction a little bit from that sense. And I've seen people do that, but it's not something I would do unless I was really pressed into service to make local first happen. So I would say, you know, we say this in the essay on when to use hypermedia. If local first is a must for you, then HTMX is probably, or hypermedia is probably not a good thing. And HTMX is probably not a good thing. So,
yeah. You've mentioned HTMX2 in this conversation. I guess that goes into one of my questions, which was like, what does the future of HTMX look like given its rise in popularity now?
Yeah, I think the future of HTMX looks very much like the present of HTMX, which I hope looks very much like the past of HTMX. Mm-hmm. I think the core, there's seven core attributes. The core abstractions of the library are correct in as much as they implement what my idea of generalizing hypermedia controls is. And there's flaws. Like if I could take things back, I would, but we're not planning on breaking backwards compatibility in HTMX2 very much at all. There's going to be a couple of sort of corner cases we clean up a little bit, but not any major API changes. So most HTMX1 users should be able to upgrade to HTMX2 without any changes at all. And my hope is that we're going to drop IE support in 2, so that'll let us clean up the implementation a little bit, use some more modern JavaScript features internally. But the API should not change. And I don't anticipate it changing much going forward. That's my hope anyways.
Let's talk about the Twitter stuff. We went as far to title our episode is HTMX a joke? Because like props to you, but you're like a number one troll online, and just run the most hilarious Twitter account. And it's so much as to be, whenever somebody talks about HTMX, they have to say, I know the Twitter account is a little bit much, but it's actually a pretty smart way to build the application. So, how did you learn to be such a good, troll online?
Good troll online. How did I learn to? I think shoot post is the word you're looking for there.
Yeah.
yes.
I grew up in like on the forums in the late 90s and early 2000s, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of rough and tumble, and I got pretty good at making memes and stuff like that. And I didn't do it for a while because I had a startup going, and Intercooler JS I don't want to say it died, but it definitely flatlined. It had nowhere near the attention that HTMX is getting now. When I came back and did HTMX, I had this Twitter account that still had a fair number, for me, it was a lot. It was a couple thousand followers, which seemed like a big deal at the time. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to have fun again, because I tried to be professional a little bit. I mean, you can go look at you can look at intercoolerjs.org website. There's some silly stuff there. But I did try to be a little bit more serious about things. And with HTMX, I was kind of like, you know what? This idea is dead anyway. So I'm just going to have fun and run the Twitter account the way I want to. And I did that, and it just worked out. People, there's not a lot of strategy here. this is just me being
great.
Just having fun. And there have been a couple of times when I got lucky, like that whole Microsoft, the whole setup me pretending like Microsoft was going to buy out HTMX. I just got really lucky there, and so I got this stupid email from Bed Bath and Beyond from Microsoft. There have been a couple of times whenever tried to set things up like that, but for the most part it's just me being me.
Tell the story about the whole Microsoft thing, because I had caught parts of it, but I could not piece all the hilariousness together, and I was like, I'm not gonna. When you see a subtweet on Twitter, you're like, I don't got time to research what this is about.
What's the background here?
Yeah, I think there was a job posted at Microsoft that mentioned HTMX. That's what started it. And so there was this job, and it didn't even say you have to be an HTMX expert. It was as a comma, after React and Vue and all this other stuff. Like at the very end, they were like, oh, and HTMX. And so someone retweeted that, and I was like, oh, okay, we'll have some fun with this. And so I quote tweeted that and said, oh, this is I think I just said interesting. I tried to be really mysterious about it. And then I started finding people that were mentioning Microsoft positively and quote tweeting them and saying interesting. And so for a week, I did that for about a week. And then literally this is just shows it's way better to be lucky than good. I got an email from the Microsoft credit card division offering me a credit card with 10% off on Bed Bath and Beyond. And and I had wanted to change the license of HTMX from BSD2 to BSD0 because BSD2 requires that you distribute the license and copyright with it, which doesn't make a lot of sense in a JavaScript library. And so I started, I think on Friday, or I forget what it was. But I was like, I, first of all, I made my account super professional looking. Like I took out all the, you know, junk. I made my icon like normal and so on and so forth and just started being like really serious to freak people out. And then I posted, I think on Saturday or Sunday night, I was like, okay, I have a very interesting offer from Microsoft. And I was just talking about that stupid credit card offer that I had gotten. I'm going to announce a license change tomorrow to guarantee the financial stability of HTMX going forward. You know, just trying to get people freaking out, you know, about, another open source rug pull coming, incoming. And then the next day I just said, okay, it's BSD zero. And the offer was this stupid credit card offer. So that was probably the biggest setup I've done. You know, beyond that, it's all just been like chaos. Like, you know, when, at some point, I hope Elon Musk actually takes the bait on one of my tweets, and that'll be, I'll probably delete my account after that.
Oh, that's great. That's good.
Okay, so we're about 50 minutes here. Is there anything that you want to get across about HTMX that we haven't covered yet?
Yeah, I think one thing I've been saying this on most of the podcasts I've been going on lately is I do like the idea of de-escalating the language around HTMX and just the web development in general. HTMX is a tool. I think it's a useful tool. I think people who are React developers could, you know, learn about it and find something useful in it and maybe find it useful for like an internal project or whatever. If they've just got to get a button up that does a thing, maybe they don't need all that stuff. You know, the ideas of hypermedia are interesting, just from a technical standpoint. So I think, you know, you don't have to, and I can't tell people who hate HTMX how to behave, but if you're, you know, if you like HTMX, I would ask that you be, you know, reasonably balanced in your promises around it. It's not a silver bullet, and software development's always hard regardless of, you know, whatever tool you pick. So, I've been trying to de-escalate. So it's tough because, you know, I do joke a lot. And so I'm like, you know, everyone be nice. And then I post some like just outrageous meme and it's like, well, I think it's an interesting tool that you can learn pretty quickly, and there's some interesting ideas behind it. Don't feel like it's like a life or death situation.
Yeah, I've noticed that. You know, I mean, it's not anything new, but you know, people are so tribal about their tools, and their tool that they find to be effective is apparently the only tool that can be effective. And I think that's such a wrong place to be in life, which is one of the great things about us getting to do this show is that, you know, Wes and I, we get to try a bunch of different tools. We don't have to necessarily deeply ingrain them into our personalities. We can talk to people like yourself and really get a good handle on, you know, what these things are good for and maybe where they're not appropriate. But yeah, I think that's a good advice for anybody out there and not just fans of HTMX is that, you don't got to be tribal about your tools. You know, I think these tools all exist for reasons, right? They all exist for a reason. And just keep an open mind about them. Okay, so now is the part of the show where we can get into sick picks and shameless plugs. Did you come to the show with a sick pick or a shameless plug?
Let's see. I'm going to recommend your listeners look at two pieces of technology. I will recommend they look at Alpine.js. I don't know how much you guys have talked about Alpine.js.
Yeah, we had Caleb on the show.
Okay. So that's a really interesting, you know, that library has a lot of locality, you know, associated with it. And then another one that's a smaller library that kind of has a mix of HTMX and Alpine together is something called Datastar. And I believe the URL is data-star.dev, which is, it was made by someone who came on the, Dave Delaney, who came on the HTMX Discord and had a bunch of ideas around how to improve HTMX. And we basically were like, no, too complicated. So he did the right thing. He went off and did it himself. And so that's another approach to sort of this hypermedia oriented model. It's more sophisticated in some ways. But I think that's like, if HTMX doesn't grab you because it's too simple or stupid or whatever, maybe go check out datastar.dev.
Cool. Yeah, I've never heard of this.
It's pretty new.
They also have an essays page. All these academics getting into web development.
Yep.
And shameless plugs. Is there anything you would like to plug?
I guess, you know, my book, Hypermedia.Systems, you can read it online for free. If you want to, you can pay for the Kindle version, or we sell a hardcover version of it as well. The hardcover version, I've heard, has had some printing issues. So it's unfortunately Amazon On Demand is apparently somewhat erratic in what it produces. But the cover is really cool, which is why you're buying the hardcover anyways. So
yeah, the website's really cool, too.
Yeah, it is. And then there's also swag.htmx.org if you want to go buy HTMX stuff, including there's a poster of the cover. So if you don't want to pay $50 for the hardcover, you just want the cover for a poster. We sell the smallest version of that poster at cost because Berkeley Graphics, which is now, I think, US Graphics, he changed his name. They did an unbelievable job on the cover. And so we wanted to make that available to people. They want.
Wow.
There's a lot of silly stuff on swag too.
That's really cool. What's up with the pickle?
What's up with the pickle? Someone generated that pickle and I took it and hacked it up a little bit in Photoshop, or I use Photo P, I think is what it's called, the online version. And then I used it. I don't know, man. I don't know what's going on. It's just really, really funny and like awkward in a sort of very HTMX. It just works. I don't know what to say about it.
There's a lot of good vibe stuff on here, like the platypus pickle. It's like a platypus pickle, yep. The buffalo with the laser eyes, and the influencer.
Yeah, we try to have fun.
Shill of the month.
You know, you might as well have fun. You might not be successful. You might as well have fun.
Yeah. Well, it's been awesome, Carson. It's been really great getting to talk to you. And I hope the audience has a little bit better of an idea about the intricacies of HTMX after this one. And it's something that I've personally been really enjoying working with. So I'm going to continue to dive deep into this world, and I'll see you online.
Great. Well, hey, thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You know, just again, thanks for taking a look at it. An admittedly idiosyncratic way to do web development.
Love it. Cool. Well, thanks so much, Carson.